Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is We Talk Productions, one of the few black-owned radio networks that explores solutions for issues in the black community, present Black Urban America. Anyone that have a comment or a question, they could dial 516-531-9540 and press 1. The lineup. Every third Tuesday, we have Bev Williams from Milwaukee, and she's the advocate in Milwaukee. And, of course, we have on Tuesdays, Black Girl of America. I'm your host, Kenny Jones. On Saturdays, we have Provocative Thought by Carter Steve. Tonight, we're going to be discussing one of the baddest men that ever walked this planet. To me, other people have other gentlemen they feel were very crucial to our culture, but I feel that this man is not only an icon, but he is a teacher, minister, any other pronoun you want to find, he's that. And they cut his life short. And don't you know that 3 more years in 2025 will be the 100-year birthday for Malcolm X. And we have a gentleman that's coming on this evening to discuss this project called Project 2025 that concerns celebrating Malcolm X 100th birthday. And from the National Center for African Communitarian Culture, Brother Stan Fu, welcome to Black Girl America.
Thank you very much, Brother Kenneth. Thank you very much for having me.
Yes, yes. You know, it's ironic that we have the discussion today about this evening about Malcolm, and yesterday was the assassination of Martin Luther King, which to me, both of these gentlemen have a very, very significant historical piece in our culture. So it's very coincidental. So,
right.
Project 2025. What is this project going to be about?
Project 2025 is called Malcolm X at 100, and it's certainly about the centennial celebration of the birth of Malcolm X. But also, we thought it was an opportune time for us to look at our situation, our political situation, our economic situation, our social situation in this country, and ask some critical questions in terms of, like, how are we faring? How are we faring economically? How are we faring politically? And how are we faring socially? And if the answer to that is not good, then we need to begin to work towards something that's that will be much better. And so we thought that combining the work of the Black Power and Black Arts Movement along with the centennial celebration of Malcolm X would be an opportune time for us to look at these questions and begin to move forward on them.
You know, there are different camps. And when I say about different camps, I talk about different camps within our culture that have different perspectives on how, as a collective, we are doing. And I think a lot of people get confused between individual progress and collective progress. You have some camps that said that we're doing well, we still got a long way to go, and there are some people in our camps that, like, we got a lot to do, the journey's still, we made some wrong decision on strategy. And this is what I say, this is my own thing, you know, and a lot of people just, our culture is young. It's a young culture. Compared, the Black American culture, the African American culture, is a young culture compared to other cultures around the world. Simple as that. We're only like 450 something years old. That's nothing.
That's right.
That's nothing. And of course we're going to make bad decisions or choices or strategies and everything. It's just that we can't stay in a, to me, we just can't stay in a bad strategy for a long time. For example, like the Civil Rights Act. To me, I think, or integrate, to me, historically, I thought that was the best. But it's a move that we had to explore and look out for. And people didn't, make progress. It's just that, not from the collective. How do you think Malcolm was served? If he was sitting in retirement home, or he was chilling out and everything, he's looking back over his work, and he would have lived, or he's up there with the ancestors, and he's looking over. What do you think his perception are about how his people are doing?
Well, I don't think he would feel too good about it. I think he would have some critical things to say about it.
What would be some of the things?
Well, just as I mentioned before, if we look at our situation in terms of how we are faring socially, economically, and politically, he would look at that because, you see, that's how he defined black nationalism. He defined it within the context of social development, economic development, and political development. And so when he would look at that, and look at how we are faring today, I don't think he would feel too good about that.
And you know what? And looking back at history, the black nationalist voices was drowned out by the black liberals. To me, black liberals were becoming first city mayors, state senators, U.S. senators, U.S. congressmen, and what have you. At one time, the black nationalist voice was being heard. Then one point in our history, it's like it was drowned out. What do you think?
Right. Well, you have to look back at what happened during the period of the Black Power Movement, and you see that black nationalism rose. It became very popular. As a matter of fact, I was a part of a black nationalist organization that became the leading black nationalist organization during the early 1970s, and that was the Congress of African People. But what happened was the Congress of African People got caught up in the ideological popularity of Marxism. And so they could not, at that time, they didn't know how to synthesize black nationalism with Pan-Africanism and socialism. They just didn't know how to do it. And so in order for them to feel like they were...
That's difficult. So, you talk about integrating three different philosophies, or as you said, three different ideologies. That's something hard
that's
to do. And and we as a young culture, we normally don't agree on everything, but yet still, when we don't agree, we just want to step away or move back. And you're right. I think the Black Nationalist movement in the 60s was very, very powerful. And a lot of people, a lot of organizations was said that Malcolm was instrumental having them decide to pick the ideology they selected. But Malcolm was a socialist, though.
Well, actually, he was moving toward a synthesis of all of those three ideological objectives, nationalism, Pan-Africanism, and socialism.
Okay.
You see, during the 20th century, that nationalism, Pan-Africanism, and socialism was developed as the three main ideological currents of our time. As a matter of fact, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah outlined in his book, The Handbook of Revolutionary Warfare, that the three objectives of the African Revolution was nationalism, Pan-Africanism and socialism, within context, of course.
And why do you think, I know you said that it was difficult for them to integrate the three philosophies, they just didn't really know. But why, you think something was more deeper than that?
Could you repeat the question?
You think something was more deeper than that, that just didn't know how to integrate the three philosophies?
Right, they just didn't know how to do it. They felt that in order for them to move, they felt that moving toward Marxism, doctrinaire Marxism, that is, that they had to denounce black nationalism. Matter of fact, some of the people considered black nationalism as tantamount to what white nationalism was. And that was a tragic mistake.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because black nationalism is a liberatory project. White nationalism is an oppressive, colonizing, and oppressive project. That's the distinction.
Mm. So, yeah, Malcolm was a black nationalist, and he became a Pan-Africanist when he left the Nation of Islam.
That's right.
Let's get back to Malcolm.
Okay.
What do you think our culture needs to focus on when they talk about Malcolm? Because a lot of people that know about Malcolm are very elderly, senior citizens, or I say maybe Generation X, thanks to the Spike Lee movie, you know, they know about Malcolm. Those are the kids from the 90s. But ones that are behind them, they don't know too much about Malcolm. So how can we elders, you know, keep that fire going? Because a lot of millennials are not into our history.
Uh-huh. We have to emphasize to the young people that our liberation struggle will not advance one bit if we do not organize fundamentally a national community organization, that is an indigenous and autonomous national community organization, that we are not going to advance at all if that kind of structure is not built. We can talk about any kind of ideology we like, but without that structure, without that fundamental structure, we are not going to move forward.
Okay. What should be our fundamental structure?
It is an indigenous and autonomous national community organization that has a program in social development, economic development, and political development.
So, how would that look like? As far as political development?
Well, political development would be based upon what we do, what we have as an economic base, in terms of we have to emphasize building an economic base prior to developing a political structure. And so in order to do that, we have to harness the productive capacity of black people in this country and develop a coherent system of, now we have, if we look at our culture, we have resources, we have natural resources that we are not tapping to build upon. For instance, you look at our artistic production, our music, theater, dance, poetry, film. We are not tapping that to benefit us economically. We're relying on going to the established orders system, Hollywood, Broadway, whatever they have, the music industry. But we are not benefiting by that. So we have to develop our artistic production so that it will economically benefit us.
And also, I might add, we have to look into, well let me ask you this before I say that. Do you think Malcolm X, the life and times of Malcolm X, should be taught in the history, not only black history, I talk about American history in the curriculum, in the school system?
Yeah, well, yeah, that can be done, but I think it's already being done to a certain extent.
No, not really. No.
Okay.
No. I mean, it's being taught in black history classes, but American history, yeah, it's not really being. Matter of fact, they came up with a thing called racial theory or something. And matter of fact, in some state like Florida, they can't even teach it.
Oh, you're talking
Georgia,
about critical race theory.
Can't teach it.
Yeah.
They barely teach the history of slavery.
Uh-huh. Well, we certainly have to teach that, of course, within the school system. But I doubt if it's going to be taught on a widespread level, as you would like. I think what we have to emphasize is building our own.
Why is that? Why is one hero taught widespread and the other one isn't? Why is that?
Well, that's because, you know, we live in a society that doesn't emphasize black development. We're not going to have that. So that's something we've been fighting for since we've been here.
So what do we need to do to get that black development? Because at one time we had.
Mm-hmm.
At one time in our history, at a point in time, we had it, and it disappeared. And I say it disappeared in the chemical warfare era. How can we get that back? Or you think we ever will get it back?
Well, we can get it back if we build those fundamental structures that I was talking about before, like an indigenous and autonomous national community organization. That's key. And focusing on economic development and harnessing our productive capacity, building upon our natural resources that we have already within our community. We're not doing that. And that's something that we have to refocus on. We have to change our focus on from protest to development, from defense to development.
Mm. Okay. Well, let's get back to Malcolm.
Mm-hmm.
When Malcolm left the Nation of Islam, were you around that time?
Yes, I'm 72 years old, so
okay. So how did? Yeah, you knew about it. How did you feel at first when Malcolm left the Nation of Islam?
Well, when all of that was going on, I was not really too cognizant about all of that. I only saw Malcolm X once on television during that whole period in the 1960s. Of course, after his sacrifice, I saw a great deal of him. But when he was living, I think I only saw him one time on television. And then after his book came out, of course, everybody was aware of him. What I felt about looking at that situation a long time, Malcolm outgrew the NOI. You know, he was trying to move them as gently as he could toward a more political stance, but they didn't want to go there. So
yeah, Elijah Muhammad was skeptical of getting involved in white politics. I am too. In fact,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you a little secret.
Well,
I don't give a shit about, I don't give a hoop about Ukraine and Russia. I really don't.
Yeah.
It's none of my business. It doesn't concern me. I'm not Russian and I'm not Ukraine. I'm not neither one. You know, if they was coming down on one of my cities like Baltimore or Milwaukee, I'll be very, very concerned. I have my ear to the TV, to social media, everything. You know, so yeah, that doesn't concern me. You know, it's somebody, matter of fact, it's buy and fight. You know, because you got business interests over there. It's none of my business. Mm-hmm. But, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was very, very, he wasn't really into getting involved in white politics, or I should say national politics. He would advocate that you get involved in local politics, but not the national politics.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. But he was very, very friendly. From my understanding, he was very, very friendly with the black Chicago politicians.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the national scene, he said, stay out of it, you know. But Malcolm wanted to, I guess, I don't know about being involved in their politics, but to confront them about their legislatures they have on the black community, like police brutality, social injustice, and what have you, which the Honorable Elijah Muhammad spoke on that too.
Mm-hmm. Malcolm saw both a political thrust and a religious thrust within the Nation of Islam. When you call your organization the Nation, that's political. Because that's, you're talking about something in terms of building a political entity, not necessarily a state.
Yeah,
because
they just say we are a nation within inside a nation. They just say
that's
that
right.
Whole thing. We're a nation inside a nation. Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
But do you feel now? There's some black scholars that feel that Malcolm shouldn't have left the Nation of Islam. There's some black scholars that say, hey, yes, he like you just said, he outgrown the Nation and everything.
Yeah.
What's your personal perspective? Do you think he should have left the Nation, or he should have stayed in the Nation and helped help make it grow into a more major entity?
Well, I don't think he could have done that inside the Nation of Islam, given the state of its leadership. I'm not necessarily talking about the Messenger Muhammad, but the circle around Messenger Muhammad. That they were not going to withdraw from the economic progress that they felt they'd been making. See, the Nation.
They made a lot of economic progress. Now you got to give it to them. I mean, like wherever there was a temple there, they had blocks full of businesses. Man, you got to give it to them.
Oh yeah.
You got to give it to them. I mean, the socioeconomic program of Elijah Muhammad Nation Islam, you know, it's rich. I got to say 70%. That one, I'm not going to say stolen, but 70% is from Marcus Garvey, in which Elijah Muhammad met Marcus Garvey. I think I heard that one time. That they met in Detroit, But he was more, Elijah Muhammad was more into Detroit at first. Then he went to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I said, because when you read the socioeconomic program of Nation Islam back in those days, and you read about black nationalism, it's a lot of correlation there.
That's right.
It's just that they had the religious part to it. That's all.
That's right.
Yeah. But and they kept it within themselves too. They really, this is only my observation. They really did work with too many other black entities in the community. Well, at least the community I was in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they did for themselves. And what they wanted to be a model for other brothers and sisters, but if you was a black Muslim, you wasn't going to benefit from, I mean, you could spend your money there and everything, but you wasn't going to, benefit from it was their world, it was their nation and everything,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't share too much with progressive black ministers from the Christian faith. That was into black nationalism and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
That's only my observation.
Okay. That's true. You know, many of the Christian ministers, just like the NOI, were very conservative in their thinking.
Yeah.
And so in terms of developing a progressive program for social development and economic development, you know, they were apprehensive about anything that was outside of their conservative views.
Yeah, they were very conservative, and the only reason why I said progressive, anything a black man does for himself or have a plan for himself, that's progressive. That's going against the grain of white liberalism and everything, but a whole lot of statements and morals and values and teaching was very conservative. Yes, especially
that's
when
right.
it comes to family, they believed in mm-hmm. they were strong believers in marriages and everything. They didn't believe in living together, you know. So just use that as an example. That's conservatism.
That's right.
That's conservatism.
Yeah, I'd like to emphasize that there are three things that African people in the U.S. must be working toward in order to advance our liberation movement. And those three things are that we must be generating progressive dialogue among each other around the necessity for an indigenous and autonomous national community organization. That's one. Two, that we have to be concerned about training a permanent circle of national community organizers within our community. And three, promoting and contributing to the Pan-African Project toward a liberated, unified, and socialist Africa.
As Brother Samson, this is what I want to ask you. That
yes.
sounds very, very great. But you have a very complex, I won't say enemy, but you have a lot of institutions that really don't condone what you're just talking about. Institutions, I'm talking about American institutions.
You talking about within our community or outside of it?
Both. Let me tell you something.
Well,
let me tell you something, Brother Saffo. Let me tell you something.
Okay.
What you talking about should be taught in every black preschool, kindergarten, elementary school, and high school. Do you really think that they're going, and I'll talk about a lot of these schools got black principals now. Do you think they're going to bring that type of thought process?
Well, we're really not concerned about whether they do that or not. We're doing that. That's why we're here. That's why our organization exists. We're doing that, and we've been doing that for since 1999.
Okay. In what way?
Well, we have a seminar that we teach called Introduction to African-American Nationalism, and it's a community organizer seminar. That's one thing. And then we have our project 2025. That's another thing. And out of that project will come another project, our economic development project.
Okay. Okay. So you move with things right. Now, let me ask you this. Let's say you get a 23-year-old. She wants to be an entrepreneur, and she wants to be attached to her community, but she's not really down that it should be just for our community. It should be inclusive. What would you say to her? Because we have a lot of people. We have a lot of people in that age category that think like that now.
Well, I wouldn't be opposed to people doing that, as long as they understand that they are a part of a developing community and be a part of a developing community movement.
So you'll bend a little, because really black nationalism is like for black, only black, and black ever, forever, according to Marcus Garvey.
That's right.
You know, which black nationalism? I say he's the godfather of black nationalism.
Say that again.
I feel Marcus Garvey is the godfather of black nationalism.
Mm-hmm.
To me. You know, so that's great. And there was a brother. I'll give you a scenario. And this probably go. The scenario I give you, and how you gonna respond to it?
Okay.
You know, it's gonna take us out of here. There was a radio show. They used to come on 11 o'clock at night till like 4 or 5 in the morning. And it was hosted by Bob Law. And Bob Law.
Yeah.
All right. I heard this story like 3-4 times, so I always bring this story up. I heard this story the first time, like in the late 80s. I said, get up out of here. But anyway, Bob Law had an experiment going on in Red Hook, which is a section of Brooklyn.
Right.
It's not black anymore. It was gentrified. He did this experiment like in the mid to late 80s. He had a store that looked like it was owned by white folks. Then he had another store that looked like it was owned by black folks.
Mm-hmm.
And the store that looked like it was owned by white folks, it was dirty, it talked to the customers, messed up, and the price was higher.
Right.
The store that looked like to be owned by black folks was clean. It was staffed by black folks, very courteous to the customers, and the price was lower. So he said it was snowing one day, and there was this old lady walked past the black store to go to the white store. So Bob Law with his umbrella run across the street. Can you take now an experiment? He said, excuse me, ma'am, why you want to go to that store? That store is close to where you was coming from and everything. She said, now I'm going to call. I don't want to do business with them ends, unquote. Now, how can you change? But we still have Black folks in our culture that still think like this. You know,
right.
How can you change the mindset? How can you change the mindset of that type of thinking that, you know, we can't do business with each other. We have a problem doing business with each other. I mean, I know that's starting to change. Mm-hmm. I know that's starting to change. I know we're moving in a good direction and everything, but we still got a large percentage of Black folks that think like that. How would you go about changing that mindset?
Well, I wouldn't. You know, we were just going about what we're doing as a group. And if those brothers and sisters who feel that way feel that they might at some later point become part of what we're doing because they might benefit from it, then we welcome them. But we would not be wasting our time trying to convince them that they should change their mind and join us, because that is exactly what it is, a waste of time.
You don't think they're worth at least trying to change their thinking process?
Well, of course they're worth it, but they have to. But worth is extended both ways, from them to us and from us to them. So if they feel we are not worth it, then why should we waste our time?
Okay. You know, there's going to be a lot of folks left behind.
They come along. I don't think they want to deal with the enemy, you know, the enemy in terms of like who they really are. I don't think they want to deal with that.
Breaking news. They think the enemy is right. Hold up. They don't want to make moves without the enemy permission. They still
give them time
to satisfy the enemy, because get approval from the enemy.
Well, see, this allow them time to grow at the pace that they grow, and not really impose anything on them, because that, you know, that's just, they're only going to struggle against that. So just allow them to grow at the pace that they grow. And if they come around before it's too late, good. If not, well then.
Oh, well.
As we say in Swahili, tuta nana.
Tuta nana. Yeah. How you think Malcolm would handle this? What would you think?
I think he would. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I think he would handle it very much the way I described it. I think he would say, okay, you know, to the people, you know, we'll wait for you. You know, we'll give you time to grow. But, you know, we're moving on. We can't wait for you. So I think he would say that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm in agreement with that, too. You know, you can't. Only thing you could do is lead them to the water. You can't make them drink that knowledge, you can't make them treat that lifestyle that is needed. You know, you can't make them treat that. That's got to be a personal choice. And only thing I'm saying that hopefully by 2025 we'll have more people moving towards that direction. But right now,
yeah,
we're in the quagmire. We still got a large percentage of Black folks believing that, you know, we have to work with the enemy. We don't have enough corporations, okay?
Yeah.
We don't have enough Black-owned businesses where they can hire people and everything.
Yeah.
We're not there yet, you know. But hopefully when we get there and people in our culture will see the benefits of working for a black man or a black woman, or having their own business, or being an entrepreneur, or have a marketable skills that will help our communities. Because now the thing is, everybody trying to leave the black community. They want to move into these culturally diverse communities and whatnot. And they don't know when they leave the communities, you know, it's not only resources leaving, it's images that are leaving, which is a...
Well, one of the things that we found out was, since we started in 2018 with Project 2025, people are really excited about what we're doing. You know, we get contacted every day of people wanting to know what's going on with the project and how they can become involved. And so, from our perspective, people are really excited about moving forward and not staying behind.
Good, and that's where we need to go. And that's what we need to do, because the way our world is going, we need to start looking out for ourselves.
That's right. Know? That's right. Exactly right.
Yeah. Yes. So, of course, we can't be caught up in this mess. You know, we have to start looking out for our own communities. We have to start doing our own economic development, political, social, and educational.
That's right. That's right. Now that's a part of social development now. When we talk about development, we're also talking about not only the home and the family, but we're talking about the education of the people in the community.
That's right. And we got to start, and we got to be very selfish. It's about us and only us. Yeah, you get the white folks' money, but use the white folks' money to build your neighborhood up. Yeah. Well, Brother Stanfu, it's been a pleasure talking with you this evening. And I appreciate you for coming on the show and everything.
All right. I appreciate it.
And keep me abreast about 2025 and the things that you're doing.
Sir. All right.
That's it for another week, ladies and gentlemen. I'm glad you tuned in. But I don't know why you guys don't like asking questions and whatnot. God, I know you're listening now. And this is another week, another solution to address our issues in the community. As always, I am because we are. We are because I am. Good night.
Be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to